From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a special guest talking to us about his sojourn with Sai and music. The man I am talking about is Sri Sonam Gamso Tenzin. Sri Sonam joined the erstwhile Sri Satyasai College of Arts, Science and Commerce in 1978 for his 11th grade and continued in the same college till his PhD in 1990 and received the degree from Bhagwan during the 65th birthday celebrations. During his stay here with Bhagwan, he was a member of the Prashanti Mandir Bhajan group, which gave him the unique privilege to sing innumerable times in the divine presence and compose many bhajans that we sing today. On his graduation, he was blessed by Swami to go out and serve as the assistant director of Sikkim Research Institute of Tibetology for 5.5 years. After gaining experience in this position, he has been busy with many projects, some with UNICEF and the government of Nepal. Mr. Sonam has traveled extensively, working in the fields of archaeology, culture and social development. He is also actively involved in several NGOs and Sai Seva projects. He regularly visits Prashanti Nilayam and mentors young members of the Prashanti Mandir Bhajan group. So with that introduction, dear listeners, and before I go into the conversation, just to let you all know that all the bhajans that you'll be listening in this show today are composed by Brother Sonam. So Sairam, Brother Sonam, and it's such an honor having you with us today.
Sairam Vijay, it's a privilege for me too.
Now, you have been interviewed many times by Brother Bishu for Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories,
yes,
and also for Bhajan Tutor.
Yes.
So I think it's going to be a bit of a challenge for me today to find the right questions to ask you. And most of the interviews here, they begin with the question, how did you come to Swami?
Yeah.
Let me ask a slightly different question today. And my question is, how did you come to believe that Sri Satya Sai Baba is God? You know, different people have different journeys. For somebody, they see Swami for the first time and then and there they realize that he is God.
Yeah.
For some other people, it is a journey where they read books, they listen to his discourses, they listen to other people's experiences, and then slowly they come to believe that Swami is God.
Yeah.
And for somebody else, it is a big miracle happening in their lives, and that convinces them that, yes, he is God. What is your journey?
Way back in 1975, I was then in high school, and just a teenager. All of a sudden, there was so much talk about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. One of our teachers, in fact, used to tell us that he was consistently writing letters to Bhagwan and receiving his grace and sometimes his reply. Baba would answer to all the prayers. And then we were all enchanted. We wanted to hear a little more about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. There was one corner shop somewhere down there in Kalimpong. When I was studying in Kalimpong in Darjeeling district. And this gentleman, he had a sweetmeat shop. But then he also stocked some of these beautiful amulets of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, you know, those lockets and rings especially. And then we used to flock there to get hold of some ring. And at that point of time, I used to think that if I wear one of those talisman, I might pass in the examination and I might be successful in all my ventures, you know.
At that time, you thought of Swami as a saint or as God?
We thought that he was a very powerful guru.
Okay.
Who might help me. So it was all doubt and delusion, but at the same time, we were just, it's just like hanging on to the last straw when we don't really prepare well for examination. And then we would feel that maybe we need some divine intervention, you know. And then when I went home during vacation, my mother told me that there was one house, my mother was throughout a school teacher, and one of her colleagues invited her home to see this, to witness this wonderful miracle. She had installed Bhagwan Baba's photograph, and so much vibhuti and amrit started flowing out of the photograph. And it was not on the exterior, like it was inside the frame.
Okay.
And that convinced everyone. Then she also had some books to give. And it was a compilation of Swami's bhajans done by one Mr. Krishna Singh Muktan in Darjeeling. It was a very small book with Swami on its cover. And she brought it home. And that was the first time the moment I caught hold of that book. And my mother told me about the miracle that she had seen. And then it was that moment that I believed that I'm with Bhagwan, with God Himself.
And how old were you then?
I was hardly 14, 15 maybe.
Were you 100% convinced that this is God?
Yeah, I was. It was not a question of conviction. It was just a natural state of being that He is God. That's it. And in our house, actually, we were, right from our childhood, I belong to a Buddhist family, and we practice the Tibetan type of, you know, Tantric Buddhism. And then we have been all the time talking about Buddha and Bodhisattvas, and it was there in, you know, in the air, even right from my childhood. So it was not so difficult. And my elder brother, my first cousin, he was studying in Villa Vidya Mandir, and he would come home during vacation and tell us so many beautiful tales of Angad and Hanuman and, you know, and the valor and of these people. So we were filled with admiration for these divinities.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, and my mother told me that she had seen it pratyaksha, that, you know, vibhuti flowing out, I said that it must be God and no one else. So that was love at first sight.
Great. So how did that lead you to joining Swami's college in Puttaparthi?
Well, after that, it's a very long story. To cut it short, what happened was my father passed away. And then, you know, I started mending my wayward ways. Like, you know, for 10 months, I smoked cigarette. I did everything that a teenager would like to do. And then after 10 months, I left everything. My father passed away. And then that was the turning point in my life wherein I became very sick. And then the doctors told me that I had chronic asthma. It was pneumonia, and then it turned into chronic asthma, and I could not breathe at all. So I thought I was going to die. So I told my mother that whatever mistakes I have committed in my life, I would like to, you know, I would like some redemption. So why not go to Puttaparthi? Because we have heard, we have sung the glory of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Because by that time, Vibhuti had started, Amrit had already, you know, Swami had given us so much Amritam at home.
Okay.
So I just cut things short. But
yes.
In between, what had happened was, soon after the first introduction, my first cousin, my sister, cousin sister, she had a vision of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba just in our front yard. He was just passing by.
Okay.
And when she saw that, again she narrated that. Then like a madcap, I went running down to the market to find a photograph of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, and found one photograph at last. It was a print, you know, photo print of Swami. And then I just got it framed and installed it on our altar. And the first bhajan that I had learned, when a group of bhajan stalwarts had come to Sikkim from Kalimpong to teach us how to sing bhajan. So it was in the local temple, Hindu temple called Thakur Bari, that this convention took place.
So these bhajan singers were members of the Sai organization?
They were from the Sat Sai organization, and they taught us and they told us extensively about Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And I had just learned Manas Bhajare and some of these bhajans. And mind you, at that point of time, we Buddhists used to be so afraid because there was so much orthodoxy in the Buddhist clan, and we were afraid that someone might go and tell the king of Sikkim, that here are some Buddhists who are now turning into renegades, you know. So that was one fear. So the first time we kept the photograph of Swami on the on our shrine, and then the bhajan that we sang that I had learned, I whispered it. I didn't sing it loud for fear that someone might hear it and go and report the matter to the police or the authorities. So it was just Manasa Bhajare. It was just whispering Manasa Bhajare, Guru Charanam. I had just started the bhajan that right in from inside the frame, inside the frame of the photograph, so much Amrit started flowing out. And it started flowing out of the frame.
Okay.
And that was the first introduction. All this had been done already. And so much had happened by the time my father passed away. I was 16. Then that was a turning point. I told my mother that I think I don't know whether I'll live. That why not go to Puttaparthi? So I was very penitent and I wanted to fall at the feet of Bhagwan and then tell him that Swami, please forgive me and then die there. That was the idea. So I came to Prashant Lime for the first time with my mother and my niece. We three of us, these were all unknown terrain for us. We had never been to South India, never been inside a train for that matter. So when we reached Prashanthi Nilayam, it was heaven. And the very next day, Swami gave us an interview. And in that interview, Swami almost like, you know, opened up an entire chapter, a very important chapter of my life, and then told me everything exactly as it was.
What you did before?
What I did before, the way I smoked cigarette, the way I, you know, indulged in so much of abuse of everything, every privilege given to me. And then Swami, these were his beautiful words. He said, Tumko ek life aur tumko ek youth diya, sara waste kar diya, kya prayojan, he said. Then, and I was breathless, like I was not breathing properly. I was, so Swami said, ab kya chahiye? So then I said, Swami, I didn't come to ask you for life. I know I'm dying. So kindly allow me to die at your lotus feet, but forgive me first. Then Swami said, kai ko forgive karna? Then I said, Swami, mujhe forgive kar dijiye so that, you know, whatever wrong that I have done in this life, kindly allow me to rectify that in my next life so that I should be born to this mother. And I should be able to serve her. Give me the right state of mind to do that. The moment I said that, he just lifted me. And he embraced me. And then he just opened the top buttons of my shirt. And then he created so much vibhuti and applied it on my chest. And said, breathe. Three times he asked me to do very vigorously. And then I was healed and cured that very moment. The breath that I had not been able to take in for such a long time, almost 10 months, I could breathe like a normal human being. And then after that, Swami said, Thik kar diya, ab kya chahiye? Then in my heart, I was telling Swami, I want to join your college.
Okay. So you already knew about Swami's college and students?
I knew about Swami's college. I had seen the students also. Okay. I wanted to join his college. I had been to Vrindavan. Then I wanted to join his college and it was there. It was these were unspoken words in my heart, in my mind. Swami, I want to join the college. He just looked at me and said, Haan, join kar sakta hai. Then he looked at my mother and said, Amma, isko June mein bhejo, Swami admission deta hai.
Wow.
This is how it started.
Thank you.
So you literally had a grand opening, if I can call that way, into the Sai fold.
Yeah.
Even though in your case, it is faith that came first, and then the greatest miracle, that is, he literally brought you back from death.
Yes.
So the greatest miracle, it came next.
Definitely.
Because you already knew that Swami was God, and you had faith that Swami can cure you.
Yeah.
And the first thing that Swami did, he said, why should I forgive you? And then he literally erased your past right then and there.
Yeah.
So there he behaved like a very loving mother. You know, we say that Swami has the love of 1,000 mothers.
Yeah.
And many times people imagine, when we say Swami has love of 1,000 mothers, everybody imagines Swami to be, you know, all the time smiling and saying, that's okay, Bangaru, no problem. I'll forgive you all your mistakes. But we students know that there is another aspect of Swami, which is that of a strict father. We have seen Swami getting angry, if I can say that, for apparently trivial reasons.
Yeah.
You know, for very simple reasons, sometimes you see Swami getting very angry and throwing out people or scolding people.
Yes.
I'm sure having stayed with Swami for these many years, you would have seen that side of Swami.
Yes.
So can you narrate some of those experiences?
Definitely. Vijay, when I narrate these, when I even think of those moments now, in retrospect, narrating them is such a beautiful experience now. At that point of time, it must have been very painful. And I know it was very painful, even when it happened to me. And then when I saw it happening to some of my other friends, you know. But then in retrospect, as I said, what I have understood, you know, talking to you now, as I understand this, as you said, for the slightest trivial, you know, reason, Swami would sometimes be very strict and reprimand that person so hard that that person would just break down. It would be almost, you know, intolerable. But then for certain people who would have committed maybe bigger mistakes, seemingly when we look at it, and then Swami would just pat the person and wouldn't say anything. So what I've understood is, you know, he would take care of a person's individual problem, and then depending on the problem that actually I already was experiencing, like my ego, my jealousy, all these negative qualities, to erase that, he would, you know, give us a dose. And the dose would be exactly, the quantum of that dose would be exactly, you know, it would be commensurate with the size of my problem. And then the master knew how much dose to give. Like the same dose that he gave me once upon a time wouldn't make any difference today. Not because I have become insensitive, but because definitely I have crossed those boundaries now. I have definitely transcended those states. And definitely I can hold my heart and tell you all of us, we are evolving so much. And that is why, at a later stage of time, we needed larger or bigger doses, you know. And then it would happen. He would just dole it out and we would really, not succumb to it, because he would just hold you again. Because we would again pray to him. So this was continuously happening. I can just tell you one or two beautiful incidents in Vrindavan. One day it so happened that there was one of my seniors. He was known to be, the rowdy.
Okay.
Swami calls them rowdy, you know. And in our parlance, what was a rowdy? Someone who would break the hostel rules that we should not go to the forbidden zones, you know.
Yeah.
There was a corner shop where we were all the time tempted to go and eat those apple cakes, you know, brought from Nilgiris. So to go there was not allowed. And then once you would transgress that, it would be taken as a gross indiscipline, and then you would be punished. But imagine the yardsticks that Swami had actually, made for us. We were not supposed to go beyond those bounds, you know. So now this gentleman, this rowdy, I'm not mentioning his name.
Okay.
But this guy, he had transcended all those barriers, gone to eat apple cake, and then he had just roamed around in Bangalore. He had done everything, and then he was a formidable guy, very well built. And a lot of people would think twice, about going and taking on him. So, Swami just decided that he would throw him out of the hostel. Because Mr. E. Sudarshan, such a wonderful person, he used to be a warden. And then Swami said, even Sudarshan is unable to control this guy, so I'll just throw him out. And that day I saw Mr. Sudarshan, he went to pray to Bhagwan to forgive this boy.
Wow.
And when he asked for forgiveness, Swami was, that day, so livid with anger. My God, I said, God, you are so angry. And then we were all so afraid. We were just, almost stricken with fear.
That if you open your mouth, even you could be thrown out.
You could be thrown out. I thought that he's going to burn the whole universe now. He said, Kukka, Donga. All those names, Kukka is dog, Donga is a thief. And Mr. Sudarshan was telling, no, Swami, he is not like that. He is also one of our students, your boy, your child. You should forgive him, Swami. And Swami said, why should I forgive him? Then Swami spat on the ground. Thoo! Why should I forgive him? Then Swami said, I'll throw him out. Now we throw him out. Bad Pampistanu. Then Mr. Sudarshan said, Swami, please forgive him. He went to catch Swami's feet and Swami kicked him on his chest. And with that kick, he fell down flat on the ground. He collected himself from there. Once again, he went, crawled on the ground and caught Swami's feet. That scene comes to me so vividly today. Imagine, like an elder brother, Mr. Sudarshan was praying to Bhagwan on behalf of a person who had been a nuisance for him also. And then Swami said, why you are doing this? Is he not a pain for you? Is he not causing problem to you? For me, no problem at all. I am not the warden of the hostel. You are the warden of the hostel. Then he said, Swami, I can easily handle him because he is one of my younger brothers. Swami, please forgive him. And Swami looked at him and patted his back with so much love. And Swami said, okay, I forgive him because you are asking me.
Wow.
So Swami forgave him. And then, I have seen this happen right in front of me. He called him to his office. And then there he would square up with him. He would play the role of a warden then. He was such a, short, small person, human being. But he was so tall, you can't imagine, taller than the sky. So this gentleman, this boy, he cried in front of him and said, sir, I'll never do this again, sir. Sir, I'll mend my ways, sir. Then he said, okay, you are forgiven. God has forgiven you. What else do you want?
Okay.
So I have seen this. And at a very later stage, when Mr. Sudarshan was leaving the hostel for good and going away from our midst,
And
at that time, this so-called rowdy was one among those hundreds of students who were crying and trying to catch his hand. He was one of those who was praying every day that Mr. Sudarshan should not leave us and go. So I have seen this, you know,
yes,
with my own eyes.
Did you have any personal experience with that Saraswami?
So many, because I have been in and out of the hostel,
okay,
in and out of the university so many times. And every time this has happened, it was a time for real introspection.
Yes, and I am also interested in that personal experience, plus what lesson you learned personally from that experience of yours.
Now, exactly what transpired, instead of going into that, because that would be a very big story by itself.
Okay.
But when I was punished, it started with a very mild dose, like Swami said, let him not play harmonium in the mandir.
Mm.
And that much dose was enough to hurt my ego, to hit me very hard, and then to, you know, make me, you know, look within, to find out what were the mistakes that I have committed. In the beginning, it started with a total tirade against on him, saying that, why do you have to do this? After all, if I have committed a mistake, I am just a human being. But then, do you need to be so harsh with me? Now, all that happened, and then I got exhausted. And then I sat down to, you know, go within and then do my introspection. And I found out that I was such a scoundrel that I had never deserved to be at his lotus feet. I had never, you know, left any stones unturned to bypass his commandments, to disobey him. I had done all that. And then once that started happening, and that happens, Vijay, you know, as you know, only by his grace, you are able to really find out, diagnose,
yes,
your problem.
Yes.
And then once the diagnosis, once the prognosis is correct, then he helps you, you know, helps you out of it. And then in his own beautiful way, there were so many occasions, once when I was really harshly turned out, and then I was allowed by our warden, sir, Mr. B.N. Narasimhamurthy, to sit near the gate of Tri Vrindavan. I was not allowed to enter, but I could sit outside. Before that, again, one such thing happened. Swami said, he is not allowed to sing bhajan anymore. So I was in Tri Vrindavan. And then, though I was a Parthi student, that was the vacation. And then, just the day before, I had sung bhajan in his presence. And then the next day, he just dropped the bomb on me. And then he said, no, he is not allowed to sing. So I was just standing outside, not allowed to go inside the Tri Vrindavan. And then on the third day, I saw Mr. Balram in his car, and then he was lighting from his car, and he needed somebody to carry a huge load that was there in the trunk of the car. So I just saw my opportunity, I just went running and caught hold of that, and it was, I think, one of those big texts, and it was beautifully, you know, there was a beautiful wooden, carved wooden casket-like thing to hold it. And then I carried it behind him. And as I entered Swami's adjacent room, the room adjacent to the interview room, Swami was just seated there. And all the stalwarts, they were all around Swami. And the moment I entered there...
Stalwarts, you mean all the devotees? I mean, you mean the VIP devotees?
The VIP, I would call them the senior devotees.
Okay.
And then the those very fortunate... people, students, who would be all the time with Bhagwan, you know, they were also seated there. Mr. Radha Krishna was there, and the moment I entered, I just dropped the book. And I just went running and caught his feet.
Okay.
I said, Swami, please forgive me. And Swami looked at me and said, aisa nahi karna. Very, you know, very quietly,
okay,
he was
okay.
Telling me, don't do like this, people are watching. That is the connection, you know, between him and his students, that we have that exclusive, you know, privilege to be treated that way. Swami said, like, it's a household matter.
Yes.
Domestic matter. Why do you leak it out? You know? So Swami was telling me, aisa nahi karna, sab dikhta hai. Then Swami said, kahi gud hota hai?
Okay.
Why are you crying? Then Swami said, you know why is he crying? This fellow, he wants to go home because he is like a butterfly. His mind is here. His mind roams everywhere. Body is here. He wants to go home because I didn't give him the permission to go home. So he's crying. You go home. You can go home now. Then I said, no, Swami, I don't want to go home. I want to be at your lotus feet forever. And I caught his feet. Then Swami said, haan, theek hai. Then I said, Swami, main bhajan gaun?
Okay.
Can I sing bhajan? Because that was what was obstructing all my, you know.
Yes.
My happiness. I said, Swami, can I sing bhajan? Haan, ga sakta hai. Kab bola, nahi gaane ke liye, ga sakta hai. Then I just sat with the boys and sang bhajan. And it continued.
Okay.
As long as Swami was in Vrindavan, I sang bhajans. Then once he went back to Puttaparthi, I was dropped out.
Oh.
I was not even allowed to stay in the hostel.
Okay.
I went and made my home in the Ganesh shed.
Okay.
So in a corner, I started staying there, and to cut things short again, it took some time, but then he brought me back in all his grace and in his magnanimity, he again brought me back, and I was there. My first music program was there, and he allowed me to be in that music concert.
Wonderful.
पन्नग शयना कलिय अवतारा प्रदायक पाप विनाशक बुद्धि प्रदायक पाप विनाशक I Shayana Kali Avatara.
So, you know, you spoke about Warden Sudarshan.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, during my stay as a student in Swami's university, there were a lot of senior teachers and certain senior students who inspired me a lot to focus only on Swami and to do meditation and bhajans, etc., etc. So I'm sure that during your stay with Swami in the Swami's university, there were a few senior teachers and few fellow students who were role models for you too.
Yeah.
Would you like to narrate few incidents or maybe talk about few of such people who are here with you?
Well, Vijay, it will take me a whole day to tell you.
Maybe just one or two.
You know, when I was in Vrindavan, every lecturer who was teaching us or who were not even teaching us, they were all role models. And when I would look at each person like Mr. Ravi Shankar, Mr. Kamal Sahni, Mr. Anup Jalani, you know, they were all paragons of virtues. They were so close to Bhagwan, so well knit with Bhagwan. Most of the time they would be with him, Nityanand Menon, you know, that I would feel that, you know, I wish I could grow up into these people. I wish I could become like them, you know. So that used to be the wishful thinking. Whenever I looked at them, you know, I would feel that way. And it was not only my experience, that every student today who belonged to my batch, they would just tell you the same, that every lecturer was a role model. Now, I'll just start with Mr. Sudarshan only. And
yes.
I think
maybe one incident that inspired you so much.
Mr. Sudarshan came from a very wealthy family. And all these lecturers, whoever was teaching us, who were living in the hostel, all of them, they were from very, very good families and very good background. And, you know, there was nothing that would stop them from going and living a very luxurious life. After all, they had completed their studies there and they should have gone. But then they stuck on to Bhagwan. They wanted to live with Bhagwan. And that was the charisma of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, as you know, the magnetic pull of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And among these people, the person whom I really adore to this day until the end was Mr. Sudarshan. He was a warden. And then he lived by precept and practice. He used to have, you know, possess only two pairs of white and white. And then just one bed sheet, no mattress, no bedroll. And all of us, we lived a very, you know, Spartan life, as you know, we do in our hostel. And he would just sleep on, he would spread that bed sheet, sleep on that, no pillow. And then have another bed sheet, pull another bed sheet over him and sleep. That was one thing that I saw. Another sterling quality was, he would be the first person to wake up in the morning and then be there dot on time for Suprabhatam. And the way he would wake up everyone, the aura of Sudarshan was so strong in the hostel that boys really believed that he was omnipresent and omniscient. And then I have also experienced his omniscience once in a while. And I think that is what happens when a person is, you know, in thought, word and action, so much wedded to divinity.
In tune with Swami.
In tune with Swami. That all the beautiful qualities of divinity starts, you know, exuding from that person. And this is what was happening. And once Mr. Sudarshan, I saw him eat, you know, having his dinner at night. You know, after everyone would have taken his food, his dinner, and then whatever was left over, Mr. Sudarshan was just trying to, you know, there was a little bit of rasam and some rice, and then that was what he was eating with some buttermilk. So I just dared to go there and ask him, sir, you could have asked the cook to keep some food for you. He said, I am like the captain of a ship, and I should be the last person to leave the ship. And I'm not saying that you are sinking, because we'll never sink. We are all the time floating, and by His grace. And he said, whatever I am doing, I know what I am doing. you go and mind your business. You go and study. Is this not study time for you? And then every fortnight, he would give us a feast also. And it was all at his own expense. He would do all that. And it is not only because of that, the way he would translate Swami's discourse. He never scolded any student. And despite that, the students were so afraid of him. You know, there was also a type of, fear, a veneration.
In a sense, he commanded respect.
Yeah.
Yes.
He would evoke so many of these emotions in the students. So that's what I've
Wonderful.
Seen. Yeah.
I mean, most of the listeners might think that this is a digression from, because we are talking about Swami mainly. But I think it is also important to listen to the stories of his devotees. Like, for example, now we talk about Mirabhai, and when we talk about Mirabhai, we feel that devotion in us, you know.
Yeah.
It's not just, we're not just listening to the story of Krishna, but when we listen, even when we listen to the story of his devotees, we
yes.
feel inspired and we feel that devotion. I think it is important that we talk about some of these people who really lived exactly according to what Swami wanted, how Swami wanted them to live.
I agree with you, really.
Swarupa Narayana, Pranava Swarupa.
शयन हरि
भय भंजन शेष शयन हरि
प्रणव स्वरूप नारायण
प्रणव स्वरूप नारायण
राजीव लोचन आदि सनातन
राजीव लोचन आदि
बंध विमोचन नारायण
बंध विमोचन नारायण
पद्मनाभ प्रभु कमला मनोहर
पद्मनाभ प्रभु कमला मनोहर
वैकुंठ पटे शयन हरि प्रणव स्वरूप नारायण.
And as a musician, now let's come to this musician aspect of yours. Yeah. You have been a bhajan singer, a bhajan composer. You have composed so many bhajans. And as a musician, I'm sure you have had the privilege and the fortune of being a part of so many cultural programs in front of Swami. So would you mind narrating some experiences of yours in relation to these cultural activities?
Well, again, in retrospect, you know, when I look at it, it was not that, you know, there was any need for any entertainment for Bhagwan. But then music, drama, or any cultural event used to be a part of our, you know, learning experience. And he would teach us so much. Like when I was in Vrindavan, doing my graduation, Swami got some of our seniors enact a drama called Jesus of Nazareth. And it was an epic drama which was done here. And every day Swami would sit with them. And they were all our lecturers. All these stalwarts who were our role models, you know. They were in that drama. The only person from my batch among the students, one or two students participated as actors in that drama. One was Ram Prasad, a very wonderful genius, Mr. Chakravarti's son. He was my batchmate and he also acted in the drama. So, my job was only to give some special effects on the organ. And most of the music was used from the original soundtrack of the original movie, Jesus of Nazareth. But then, all said and done, when we were rehearsing, Swami would improvise so much on the drama. Like there was a scene wherein Peter gets introduced to Jesus. And then he says that he's a fisherman. And then Swami said, you insert one more dialogue there. You are a fisherman, I am the fisher of men.
Wow.
Now it was a beautiful dialogue.
Yes.
You know, at that point of time, it didn't really fully register. Because we were just roaming around and walking around, jumping around. You know, there was no time for us to sit and really contemplate. But when I look at it, again, think of it in retrospect, what a beautiful message for the whole world. God is the fisher of men, you know. And he casts his net. And sometimes in the university parlance or the organizational parlance, if you look at it, because our visions are, you know, our systems are so limited. And then it's a net and he has netted all of us together. He has brought all of us together. And then the process of teaching us once again in his own beautiful, inimitable way, you know. So that was one occasion. And, you know, there was a Radha Krishna drama for that matter. I saw myself in that drama. the transformation of students. I still remember one person who played the role of Radha. In all, Radha and Krishna both were boys.
Yes.
And then when the drama was being rehearsed, there were some cine actors from Chennai who were here, like Mrs. Jamuna, veteran film actresses. You know,
who were ardent devotees of Swami.
Ardent devotees of Bhagwan. So they prayed to Swami that, you know, Radha speaking in a very gruff, manly voice doesn't really sound very good, Swami. Can we dub our, lend our voice and dub it, Swami? Can we dub our voice? Swami said, no need. Because it is not important whether you are a man or a woman, whether you are enacting it well outside. What is important is the enactment within you, the transformation that it should bring in you. That is important. I am not bothered about the rest of it. Swami said this. And then he said, my boys will do it very well. Don't worry. You don't have to worry. And then S. Kumar played the role of Radha. And he tried to make his voice very soft, very mellow whenever he spoke his dialogues. One night what happened was, Swami would come to the auditorium, university auditorium. Almost every, you know, alternate day he would come to see the drama rehearsal. So Swami was to come the next day. At night I just went there on my own at night. I wanted to see how the stage was set and where we would be sitting in the pit, all the musicians, you know. So when I went to see there, I just went and sat right at the back in the gallery. And from there I saw a lone figure in the middle of the stage. And I just went to see out of curiosity who was this person and what was he doing. And it turned out to be S. Kumar.
Okay.
And he had not noticed me at all. Though he was, you know, facing me, but he was so engrossed in his own act that he didn't see me at all. And then I asked him, what are you doing, man? At the dead of night, you are sitting in the middle of the stage and what are you doing here? He said, I am trying to get the Radha Bhakti. The Radha Bhava, I am trying to get it. That I can do only when I'm alone here. So this is where I'm going to act. So this is where I'm trying to cull out those, you know, to feel that way. So tears came in my eyes, and I have not said this to even S. Kumar. Even today I haven't said this to him. I never shared this with him. But when I saw this, I said, Swami, this can happen only in your university, wherein through a drama, you are teaching a person what is Radha Bhakti, what is Madhura Bhakti. All the Navavida Bhaktis taught through a text.
Yes.
Wouldn't be sufficient to teach a person the manner in which Swami was teaching this person. And even me, I also got a whiff of it. And I said that this is what we are all supposed to do in life. So this way, Swami, through these cultural enactments and dramas and bhajan, of course, our mainstay, how much we have learned through bhajans and how much we have grown spiritually because of bhajans.
Now that you narrated two incidents related to dramas,
yeah,
maybe you can narrate one in relation to bhajan singing, when you sang something in mandir, and anything, any experience related to bhajan singing where Swami taught you something, importance of devotion or anything like that.
Yeah, there are so many beautiful experiences. One small experience I would like to share with you. In fact, some time back I was about to tell this to Sai Prakash, C.J.
Okay.
Sai Prakash. And I think it's my privilege to say it now. You know, most of the bhajans are composed on 8 beats, or 12 beats, 6 beats, 7 beats,
yes,
14 beats also. But I have hardly heard a bhajan in 10 beats. And there is only just one bhajan that I had heard, I had learned. And there used to be a wonderful bhajan singer in the mandir, among the students, an exceptionally gifted bhajan singer named Sanjeev Barbora. And that day I was late for bhajan, so I preferred to sit outside. And when you sit outside, again, you know, you don't really miss all those wonderful gestures of Bhagwan, the way Swami walks through the devotees, and all that you don't miss. Normally you miss that when you are sitting inside the bhajan hall, inside the mandir, and singing bhajan. So that day I had that privilege to sit there. And then Swami was on the lady's side. And then, you know, this beautiful bhajan was going on, Radhe Govinda Krishna Murari. And as you know, this is on 6 beat.
Yes.
And then this was going on. And then Swami just was walking towards the ladies, and it was the second darshan, second round of darshan during bhajan. And then one lady must have been pining for Bhagwan for such a long time that she almost pounced on him. And in the process, she managed to scratch his lotus feet, and then blood started oozing out. So when that happened, now the process, that the entire thing was in like a blur. It's so fast. The manner in which Swami took one step forward when she did that and took the next step backward, it was exactly on the beat. Like even when he was walking, he was very consciously keeping, you know, in tune with the rhythm, with the flow of the rhythm. And, you know, that... Radhe Nanda Ananda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda. So when that was happening, Swami took the next step back.
Okay.
Then the bhajan got over, and to my surprise, and for the first and I think last time, I have never heard that bhajan being sung here again. This 10-beat bhajan. Govinda Giridhare Vrindavan Sanchare Madhura Murali Dhare Mayura Mukut Dhare. No, it's the other way around. Mayura Mukut Dhare Madhura Murali Dhare. So this bhajan started.
I have never heard this bhajan.
We have never heard this bhajan, right?
Yes.
So when this bhajan was sung, I was watching very keenly, I was observing his lotus feet. It immediately shifted and started keeping rhythm. He started walking on those 10 beats.
Wow.
Now, we just don't call him Gana Lola, Nada Swarupa. It's not for nothing. He is verily that, and he was not trying to prove anything. He was not showing off. It was just happening, and I was in tune with that flow.
I don't think other than you, anybody would have noticed that.
Yeah, maybe some fortunate ones would have, but I was really, I've been fortunate to notice that. And after that, any number of times I have seen Swami walk, there is a, you know, I have always seen, that is why people just, you know, write, Swami was gliding, or Swami was just, you know, walking so gracefully, he was so graceful. All that grace comes when we are in tune with the rhythm of nature.
Mm.
And that is what I learned that day, and I have learned in my life, that if I am in tune with the rhythm of nature, the rhythm of this creation, you know, then I look very sublime. Then I look very graceful. All my acts, all my thoughts, all my words, everything starts looking very graceful. So this is what I learned from Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba.
That's a beautiful point. I've never heard anyone put that point across like this.
Yeah. Imagine the immensity, the immense, you know, the innumerable things that you learn in a trice, in a moment of bhajan singing.
Yes.
And then the other thing that I would like to just share is, you know, he was all the time, Swami is all the time so conscious of helping the devotees lift them up, you know, from their gross stature. Because when we go and attend a bhajan, it is for our, you know, to transcend the gross barriers, you know, to transcend above our gross state of mind, state of being. So, Swami tells us that you should see to it that between two bhajans there should be no gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because mind you, when you sing bhajan, it is not an exercise in music. You are not really exhibiting your prowess in music. That is only Gitam. But Sankirtan or Nama Sankirtan, Guna Sankirtan, Bhava Sankirtan is such that when you sing that, you are helping the rishis who are sitting all around you. And in Swami's definition, whoever, even for a fraction of a second, tries to reach out for infinity, for eternity, is a rishi. So all the rishis who are seated there outside listening to the bhajan should be benefited by that bhajan and your act. So in between two bhajans, if there is a gap, that small jerk, you know, that time lapse might disturb the train of thoughts there.
Mm.
You know, the continuity of that person's contemplation. So you, instead of helping that person, you are disturbing that person. So Swami would, to that extent, he would lay down such wonderful rules that in between two bhajans, there should be no gap. Then the most wonderful thing, in between two Shrutis, let there be no, you know, up and down. Major change.
Yes, okay.
Like from C sharp to E, you know, don't do that. Then Swami would say, why can't you, you know, all the time sing bhajans on the relative chords, you know, the relative scales. So if you are on C, the next bhajan could be on F sharp, you know. Then Swami would say, then the next bhajan could be on a B flat. So it keeps relaying from this to that. So it is, there is no sharp jerk there again.
Yes, yes.
Then he would also tell us that even when you are singing a bhajan, your entire contemplation should be on the meaning of that bhajan. Especially if it is a guna sankirtan, bhava sankirtan. Now if it is a nama sankirtan, then you should be completely in your thought, word and action, you should be glued to me. You should be all the time thinking of me. Then when you sing that bhajan, there will be a type of fulfillment, not only for you as a singer, but for those who are listening to the bhajan, and then they will come and pat you and say, thank you so much for helping me.
So in that sense, the whole bhajan, that half an hour, becomes like a half an hour meditation. Rather,
it's a
half
an hour meditation,
say.
Yes. So well said.
Thank you.
ಕೇರಿ ಧರಣ ಕುಂಜವಿಹಾರಿ.
As an alumni of Swami's university,
yeah.
After you received your PhD, when you had to go out into the world,
yeah.
If I can say so, when you had to go out into the unforgiving world,
yeah.
What did you think your role was in the society as Swami's student? And how did you go about playing that role to Swami's satisfaction?
Well, I would start with the fag end of my stay here. And the penultimate, almost the last Padnamaskar as a student he gave me. It was during the summer course. And the summer course was on and I was not allowed to be a part of the summer course. And then again, I was not allowed to enter Sri Vrindavan. So I sat in Sai Ramesh Hall every day for darshan. And once again, it was a very exhilarating experience for me to once again run after Swami's car. You know, I started that way as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point of time, when I was not a part of the university and I was not allowed inside, then the only way out was to run after Swami's car. And when Swami's car would, you know, go towards the to the auditorium for the evening discourse, then I would also run and sit outside somewhere and listen to the discourse and come back. And then even as a student, maybe I have never been so attentive to listen while listening to his discourses. And then I was sitting in the Sai Ramesh Hall, and then Swami was, after the summer camp, he was giving the final Padnamaskar to groups of students and groups of teachers and people from everywhere. And then I was feeling so lost and, you know, forsaken and forlorn, and I was just sitting there, and I was praying to Bhagwan that, Swami, you have forsaken me for good, is it? You are not going to give me Padnamaskar. I got my PhD, but what will I do with it? I didn't do my PhD because I wanted to be a doctor of philosophy. Not that at all. I did that because I wanted to be with you. And definitely you would have also done the same thing. All of us, we have studied here because we wanted to be very close to Bhagwan. And if that proximity is not given, all that I have done comes to naught. Like, it's not important for me. All of a sudden, Swami asked Mr. B.N. Narasimhamurthy, sir, go and call Sonam. Where is he? So he came running and asked me to come, and I have never sprinted that way. I just ran from there, headlong inside Sri Vrindavan, and I was seated there. And then Swami was giving away Vibhuti. So when my turn came, I was just thinking, like, my heart was in my mouth, you know, and I wanted to say so many things, but I knew that I have very little time to say all that. So I was telling Swami, should I work? Because he's giving me, he's just, you know, bidding me farewell. And I said, Swami, should I work in the organization? Swami said, yes, you can work. And he was just passing by. I said, Swami, should I do government job? You will get. Go and do. This is what he said.
Okay.
Then he gave me Vibhuti. And then he turned back very sharply, looked at me and said, work in the organization. Don't pull the cart. Push the cart. This I have said earlier also, and
okay.
He said this like this only. This was the order, and this was the tone and tenor of Bhagwan. Don't pull the cart, push the cart. And then he was gone.
Wow.
Then I went home and took a thing short again. I got inducted in the state government as a gazetted officer, a junior gazetted officer. I was posted as assistant director in the Institute of Tibetology, which you were saying some time back. And then for 5.5 years I worked there. And then I had my taste of bureaucracy. And I saw that this is definitely not my cup of tea. In the beginning I tried to fight the corruption. And then I tried to fight the wrongdoings. And then I thought that this was not my way. I was not ordained to do that. So I thought that why not get out of it. So I left, I submitted my resignation. And then I went to Kathmandu, Nepal. One thought was to go to the West. I wanted to go to Canada, pursue my postdoctoral research and all that. But then the thought was I would be gone forever if I go there. That was what I thought at that point of time. Then I was, Nepal being very close by, I wanted to go there and try out. So I started working in the non-government sector. And then later on, I joined the UNICEF also. I did a brief stint there too. And then I joined my friend, my brother. He is like my own younger brother, Suman. I am Sunam, he is Suman. So he had founded an organization called Creative Arts and Media Association. So I also joined that organization. And this is how I got into this other vocation. Then, by Swami's grace, because he had said, push the cart. And that was all about backstage management. So much work is being done in the Satyasai organization. And the organization is doing so much, you know, doing, rendering human service everywhere. And there's so much ample opportunity for you to do the backstage management job, you know. So the job has to be done. You be a catalyst of things, events to happen. And then he gave me all the opportunity because I had prayed for it. And he had blessed me and it started happening. And till this day, it has been happening. Like, I'm all the time with the organization. I'm given all the opportunities to do so much work.
Like, what kind of activities are you talking about here?
Well, one of the earliest things that I thought of was I went to the organization. I was at home and most of these people would come home and then they would tell me, you know, how to sing bhajan. Then I would give them some pep talk here and there. The ego, once again, you know, it would just, you know, show its hood once again, raise its hood and all that was happening. And all of a sudden, one of the senior devotees, one of the senior coordinators in the Satyasai organization, he sent word that if he wants to talk about Swami, let him come to the mandir. He should not think that his house is the Satyasai organization. The moment he said that, I went to the organization. I didn't know that I should go to the organization. That was just my ignorance. Otherwise, I would have been doing it there. So I started going to the organization and teaching bhajans there and started with that. Then some mantras I had learned here, Vedic mantras, mm-hmm. I wanted to even share that with everyone. So what happened was, I was praying to Swami that I have seen certain sectors that had to be addressed first in the organization. Like one of the things that I saw was in the organization, most of the, you know, programs, the spiritual camps used to be either a day long program or the event would go on for 3 days at the most. So 3 days spiritual convention. So for 3 days, people would be ready to, you know, give up non-vegetarian food. They would be ready to wake up very early and do suprabhatam. After 3 days, again, old habits die hard. They would go back, you know, to their own old ways, you know. So I thought that there had to be a sustainable program. So what should it be? So in my morning prayer, I was praying to Bhagwan, and very right from the bottom of my heart, Swami was telling me, I felt, you should do tapas. So I went to my office in the afternoon. I was just trying to understand what is tapas. I understand as a layman, tapas is meditation, penance or whatever. But then what could it be? In a very dynamic sense, it must be having some purpose for the people, for all of us to mm-hmm. do. Then I was just breaking the letters. And then it turned out to be training to attain perfection, awakening and sai.
Oh.
And then the sai was again, you know, interpreted as the spiritual awareness of individuals.
Okay.
So each one of us, every devotee, must train himself or get trained for perfection, awakening, and to attain sai, which is the culmination of everything. So when I understood that, then I was, besides myself, I was so happy. Then I just prayed to Bhagwan and wrote down a curriculum. So just, it was a rough curriculum and it was more than, you know, theory. It was all practical, like the Veda chanting, then first aid, rudiments of, rudiments of self-defense, and then music. So many of these things, and then history, little bit of myself being a history person. Then I taught culture. So all these things put together became the curriculum for the program.
So this became like a course?
So it was a course for 6 months.
Oh.
So when I suggested this, everyone said it's impossible. For 6 months, how can you just run a course? Because the Sevadal program itself, our training program, is for hardly for 6 days or a week at the most. So how can you do this? And that too, Sikkim has got all different, you know, elevations and different terrain. How can you do that? I said, where there's a will, there's a way. So you won't believe me, all said, and then at the end of the day, we could do it because we are allowed to do, because the organization was all the time encouraging me and encouraging all of us, you should do it. So we attracted 2,000 people, 2,000 youth enrolled into this program.
All from Sikkim?
From Sikkim.
Wow.
And then we had 80 training centers all over Sikkim.
Okay.
And there were places where we didn't have, we couldn't send teachers because we had a dearth of trainers.
Yes.
So
yes.
First we did a TOT. And then after that, still we were short of teachers. So we, for certain practical lessons in yoga, practical lessons in Veda chanting, we made tapes. Mm-hmm. At that time, you know, those VHS, video cassettes.
Yes.
So we shot a small, documentary type, near riverside. And then, that was actually sent everywhere. And then we had also to send those, players also, cassette player and all that we had to do. But, we did this on the inaugural day. We had a massive Sarvadharma procession in Sikkim. They had never seen this. People of denizens of Sikkim had never seen a procession like that based on the theme like Sarvadharma. Everybody was so enchanted, so happy. The chief minister came to inaugurate the program and we did a yajna also. And then keeping as fire as the Sakshi, we had these 2,000 people take oath that for 6 months you are not going to really recede back. Mm. You are going to keep up with the regimen that was drawn for this whole course. So almost more than 1,200 dropped out.
Okay.
Because they thought that, once you take the oath, they were really, when they saw the fire there, so they had second thoughts. And despite that, we had almost more than 900 people participating.
Even that is a very big number.
It's a big number. It was a huge number. And 900, more than these people, they did this course for 6 months. And for 6 months, imagine, we had Omkar Suprabhatam Nagar Sankirtan every day for these people.
Okay.
And this is how we managed. We had 0 hours in the morning before going to school, college or office. They would go to the center and then there would be this morning program. And in the evening, soon after office, they would straight away go to the center instead of going home. And then there would be the evening again program, a lecture or whatever. And then every Sunday, every holiday, every vacation, we utilized for this. And it went on for 6 months very successfully without a hitch. And then they took the degree also after 6 months. And then today there are a lot of people around Sikkim you will find. They say that really I woke up at the time. So many things happen. So this type of programs kept happening one after the other. Like summer course is a beautiful thing that we have been doing in Sikkim. And then running the Satisai school is another thing. So there were ample opportunities everywhere wherein, you could be a catalyst of change. And then you didn't have to exert yourself too much also because there are so many people aspiring. And, it is just like that.
Wonderful. So with that, Brother Sonam, I think we are running short of time now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm actually ready to sit here and listen to many of the stories that you're narrating. And I'm sure in the past 1 hour that we have been having this conversation, it's been such a beautiful experience for me listening to all these stories. And I'm sure all the listeners enjoyed it thoroughly too.
Yeah.
So thank you, Brother Sonam. It's been such a pleasure having you in the studios with us today.
Thank you so much, Vijay. So much, Vijay, for calling me here and giving me this privilege. Thank you, Bhagwan.
I hope that maybe in the future we can have more sittings.
I look forward to it really.
Thank you very much.
Sai Ram.
Sharanam ilo bhagavan. నికేతన భక్త సఖా ప్రభు భక్త సఖా ప్రభు